Welcome to Global Journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. From all indications, the military of the United States and many of its allies are almost, if not completely, ready to go to war against Iraq. If there is a war, it will be because the Bush administration does not believe that the Iraqis have purged themselves of all weapons of mass destruction. Governments may be ready, and their fighting forces on the land, sea, and air may be ready. The questions are, first, how ready is the public? And second, how ready are journalists to report any fighting that takes place? There are many aspects to that last readiness. For one thing, how ready are reporters to work with the military while at the same time remaining healthily skeptical about the information they're getting? For another, how safe will the journalists be in a war zone? And for another, how will they get the news and how will they get it out? Finally, why should you, the listeners to this program, care about what the news business has done to prepare? To discuss this today, we have in St. Petersburg, Florida, Susan Taylor Martin, senior foreign correspondent of the St. Petersburg Times. In San Antonio, Texas, Sig Christensen, a military writer for the San Antonio Express and News and co-founder of Military Reporters and Editors, a new organization set up recently to deal on behalf of journalists with the Pentagon. In Washington, Jim Michaels, deputy editor of USA Today, and Bronwyn Latimer, director of photography of U.S. News and World Report. And finally, in Baghdad, Iraq, Vivian Walt, Middle Eastern correspondent of USA Today. Let's start with Sig Christensen. Sig, tell us a little bit about this new organization, Military Reporters and Editors, and what it's all about.
Well, we're an organization of about at least 200 members now. We formed early this year up in Maryland, and when we did that, we basically decided that an awful lot of people were feeling very frustrated with the Pentagon, and in particular with access issues. And it wasn't just within the Pentagon. These were reporters at smaller and larger and medium-sized markets all around the country who were having the same problems. So after we took a lot of feedback on it, we pushed forward, had a convention or a conference, rather, in November in Washington. And basically, I think that since our formation, we've certainly had something to say about the issue of access, and I think the Pentagon has heard us and reacted.
How have they reacted? Do you think that reporters will be getting more access if war does come to the Middle East?
Well, Tori Clark and her people are saying that we will have access to the military, that we will be embedded with them throughout the armed services if a war comes.
Sig, excuse me, that word embedded, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. Basically, that's a fancy word for assigning reporters to military units, whether they're in the Air Force or any of the other services. And you know, this is something that is really rather new in historical terms. I was talking or emailing Joe Galloway the other day, and he mentioned that, you know, embedding didn't exist in Vietnam, that reporters simply would go from one unit to the next rather freely, covering the war. And what the military is doing now is that they're going to assign reporters to units, and they've said or certainly suggested that they would be frontline units, and that we would certainly get our opportunity to detail what takes place at the front. As to why that is going on, it's a good question. Have we had an impact? I think we have.
Yeah, I read the text of the briefing that Washington bureau chiefs had with Tori Clark and her people at the Pentagon, and they talked a great deal about pools, about training of reporters, about embedding the reporters with various units. Susan, how do you feel about all this? Do you feel that if you go off to cover that war, it's going to help you?
We as a paper, I think, have mixed feelings about this program. We have assigned a reporter to go through the Pentagon boot camp, which I believe about 60 reporters have already gone through. It's a week-long session where you actually go out, carry a 25-pound rucksack over a five-mile hike, go through some of the physical things that you would be expected to go through if you were actually out in the field with the troops. I think our hesitation about participating in something like this, though, is how much access we would have. Would we be allowed free access to the commanders? Would we be allowed to interview the troops and to quote them freely? we see it as being a very constrained sort of environment, and as a regional paper with a limited number of people that we assign to a story like this, although we would probably up the complement in event of war, we try to do stories that are a little bit off the beaten track and away from the herd, so to speak. That's not to say that this is not very important to cover what the troops are doing. It's probably more important for papers like SIGS, which have a large military presence in their circulation area, whereas for some of the rest of us, it's more important to cover what's going on politically.
Well, Susan, I want to come back to that point about a large military presence in the St. Petersburg area. But first, I'd like to go to Vivian Walt. Vivian, all of this must sound very exotic to you. You're in Baghdad. You are hoping to cover the war from the other side. What is being done by Western correspondents in Baghdad to prepare for the possibility of a war?
Well, we're doing quite a lot, and, you know, most of us have been in and out of here for the last 3 months or so. There's kind of a core group of people now who have spent a lot of time here and who, fortunately, at this point, know a lot of Iraqis fairly well, and that is, I think, is probably going to help us enormously. Having had, you know, recent solid good contacts and built up some friendships on the ground, because we're sure going to need them. We're just beginning to scope out the city a bit and to start thinking in terms of contingencies. Like, for example, the hotel that we all stay in sits on top of a bunker that's used by top government officials. It's clearly not the place to be if there's bombs falling. So you have to think about where you're going to stay. We're, you know, beginning to look at small, discreet hotels. You know, what happens if the government orders everybody out? Is there any way that we can stay by just laying low for a while? Getting to know the city, which is extremely important you know, it becomes very chaotic. And also thinking about who we work with in terms of the drivers we have, the translators. Are they people we trust? Are they people who won't turn and run at the first sign of trouble? Because we cannot operate here alone. And we do need to form good relationships with the local population.
Yeah, Vivian.
So there's that sense of it.
Yeah, did I hear you say that some of you may actually stay even if the Iraqi government expels you?
Well, you might have to ask my editors that. I would argue probably many of us would want to stay. You know, especially having been through this phase, I would think a lot of us would want to. A lot of us are not American citizens, and, you know, that might perhaps be a slight help, although not perhaps not, you know, given that we work for the American media. But these are all very open questions right now. We're also, you know, having to think about if we have to get out, how we get out, because it's a good 10, 11 hours drive to the Jordanian border. I've done it about five times in the last 3 months, that journey, and we don't know that it's that road is going to be safe to travel on. So it really now is the time to start thinking about all these practical details. It's a very difficult country to operate in.
Yeah, Vivian, you heard Sig Christensen talk about the briefing at the Pentagon in which Washington bureau chiefs were assured that there would be training and that there would be assignment of reporters to military units, and that the Pentagon, as it was said in that briefing, would do everything to help the reporters get their stories out. Is anything similar being done by the Iraqi military?
Well, the Iraqi military we have no access to whatsoever. And in fact, it may surprise you, but there are very few soldiers on the streets of Baghdad, which is a city of 5 million people. You really don't see them around the capital. You see police, but you do not see the military. We're unlikely to get close, anywhere near to close, to the military. I think what we might really wind up covering is just the civilian part of it, which could turn very ugly under certain circumstances if there's a power vacuum or whatever. So, you know, the reporters here are really trying to figure out how they fit into all of this. We're not too sure exactly who's going to be fighting with who on the ground, and who, as American correspondents, we could get any kind of protection from.
When you say who's going to be fighting with whom, you're talking about civil strife or domestic strife between various units in Iraq, as well as fighting between Iraqi units and, as the Bush administration will put it, coalition units?
Well, I mean, it ranges the whole gamut, and we really, I think there are just so many unknowns at the moment, whether there will be a local U.S.-trained military force, or whether it'll simply be kind of a little anarchic. The Baghdad residents I've been interviewing the last week seem to worry most that there'll just be sort of widespread looting, and a lot of scores settling among Ba'ath Party people, among officials, that could be pretty bloody. Most regular folk here have guns, and Baghdad is just, you know, awash in weapons. You don't actually need a military force to come in and give them to people. They have them at home. So everybody is somewhat edgy about the way this is going to go and how quickly a new government could be in power.
Yeah, Vivian, if you don't mind, let's bring Jim Michaels into this discussion. Jim, what do you think, and how does USA Today management feel about the possibility that some of its reporters may stay there unauthorized by the Iraqi government?
Well, all these decisions have yet to be made, and the way USA Today is approaching any impending war is basically this way. You know, we'll certainly see what's available in terms of this embedding situation, because that'll obviously give us access to a variety of military units that may or may not be involved in campaigns in Iraq. There'll be subsequent, probably ad hoc pools that are put together, you know, in places like Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, and places like that. That'll be set up as campaigns develop and as the military decides to give various people access to the front.
Yeah, Jim, if you don't mind.
Thirdly, the point I'd like to make, though, is that, you know, for hundreds of years, what it really boils down to is people like Vivian Walt out there kind of, you know, using their street smarts and enterprise and initiative to get out there and cover the story. And that was true in the Spanish-American War with, you know, Richard Harding Davis as much as it is today. So as much as we complain about access, and it is an issue, it really boils down to, you know, I think it was Churchill who said the whole job of a foreign correspondent is to go as far as you can, as fast as you can.
Okay, we have to take a break right now. This is Global Journalist on KBIA. I'm Stuart Lurie. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Global Journalist. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, or make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org or here in Mid-Missouri by calling us at 573-882-9641. Jim Michaels, you were bringing up history before the break. One of the other famous bits of journalistic lore is that in a time of war, truth is the first casualty. What is being done to ensure that it is not going to be a big casualty this time around?
Well, nothing that hasn't been done in the past. After the Persian Gulf War, there was a lot of hand-wringing. After Grenada, there was a lot of hand-wringing. It was the first time, really, that since Vietnam, that the press was kind of involved in covering anything like a military conflict, and there was a lot of hand-wringing about access. The Gulf War was a little bit better, but tightly controlled, tightly managed for a variety of reasons. And Afghanistan was also very tightly managed and controlled from an American military perspective, no question about it. And I think this conflict will be as well. It's great with Seg's group that, you know, it's a great group. you know, it ought to lobby for more access. But, you know, the truth is that the public is largely on the side of the military in situations like this, and it's very, very difficult to move them off the dime. Access will be very limited, restricted. Yeah, I think there's no question about that.
Yeah. Bronwyn Latimer, is there any difference in the planning of a group of photographers and a group of reporters?
Yeah, there is, actually. I was just sort of struck by it while I was listening, because we have a staff photographer. We have staff photographers, but we also, there's a whole freelance market out there of people who have worked on stories. Many photographers who spent enormous amounts of time in the north with the Kurds. So what we do is we strategize by, we will have someone embedded with the Army, and we probably will be working with someone who has his own embedding with the Marines. And then we will have somebody maybe in Jordan, although, as Vivian said, we're a little worried about that road. But we're talking to people who have a lot of, who have done stories in the north, who can come in from there. So it's, we really are thinking in terms of experience and strategy.
You bring up the matter of freelancers. Jim Michaels, or SIG, as far as you know, is the Pentagon going to accredit freelancers and give them all of the same access that staff people have?
That's a good question. You'll let, I don't really know that. It hasn't come up between me and any of the people at the Pentagon I've been speaking with. Jim may have a better idea.
Well, you know, again, I don't have any specific knowledge, but I can say this. I mean, in general, because the military holds the cards, they are able to say we're going to provide access to a limited number of people. It then and I saw this in the Gulf, it becomes kind of a fighting among the press then as to who gets what scraps. And I think it would be very, you know, for freelancers, unfortunately, it's very difficult for them to make a case that they should be brought along. And it's, again, it's because the military basically says we have a fixed number of slots and we're going to dole them out. And that becomes very much sort of a political fight, as much as they like to say they're being fair and equitable in distributing those slots.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about communications and how you get the story out. In the old days, journalists were all dependent on perhaps people from Western Union or in a military situation, perhaps even the military to help get the story out. Now things have changed. Reporters can carry their own telephones. They can send digital photographs, video, whatever. Susan Taylor Martin, what are you doing to prepare your people?
Well, we, of course, we have satellite phones. We have regular C phones. One of the concerns that Vivian probably could have talked about is that in Baghdad, where we spent considerable time a year and a half ago, as she said, reporters and photographers are very closely monitored by the Iraqi Ministry of Information. And to my knowledge, still, all of the dispatches, both print and photographic, have to go through that Ministry of Information. And I think there is a potential boondoggle there with you know, so many people trying to get their stuff out. Even when we were there a year and a half ago, when there were very few constraints on the press, we still had, I still had to write out all my stories by hand, take them to a government fax office, which then faxed them to my office and kept a copy. You can only imagine why it was keeping copies. So it's a very difficult country to work from in the best of times, and I think it's going to be even, obviously, even harder in wartime.
Unfortunately, Vivian is no longer with us, but Jim Michaels, does...
Yeah, they've got... it's changed a little bit. I mean, I'm sure there's still there's plenty of monitoring of stuff, both before it goes out and when it's in print, but there is Internet access now, and you are able to email stuff. There's... Vivian can talk. Could have talked more to this point, but I mean, they do allow satellite phones in, although they have to be registered with the ministry, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, but you know, and just to raise another point regarding technology and so forth, even though it's changed a lot and allowed a huge amount of access during the Persian Gulf War, those reporters on pools still had to give their, you know, quote unquote product, be it video or stories to the military, which would then supposedly move it back to a rear area where it was, you know, then sent off, and that could take days and sometimes even longer. So despite all the technology, we still had to rely on a pretty archaic way of getting a copy back. This time, supposedly, things have changed a little bit, and there'll be some amount of access. You are allowed to use satellite phones with military units, but I don't think that's been completely worked out yet.
Yeah, Jim, a pool is a sort of an ad hoc organization that is set up by the military when they cannot take the entire press corps someplace. They take a small
right.
group of people who go and then report back to
right.
The rest of the press corps. Is there any censorship in the situation you were just describing, or is the military pretty honest about taking what the pool
Well, Sid could probably talk to that as well, but I would say that, you know, I don't think there's any real censorship. They're pretty smart about that and astute about that, and they've been told, and even though someone may get a little carried away on a lower level, all the people in the upper echelons understand that that you don't do something like that. So it's really more, there's no outright censorship or anything like that by no means, but, you know, clearly you can manage the message you send out by controlling the access. There's no question about that.
If I can change the subject, if this war does come, it's going to be a war between vastly different cultures and social systems and parts of the world. What are you doing, Jim and Sig and Susan and Bronwyn, to prepare the people who are going to cover this war to understand the history and the background and the varying cultures?
Well, at USA Today, they're, you know, even now doing this, we're sending a lot of journalists out into various regions that they may be covering when a conflict comes, just to get an understanding of these various areas, and as well as work out logistics and so forth. And in addition, reporters who are or may be involved in it, know who they are, and so are able to start doing some work on the phone and research from here as well now. So.
Susan Taylor Martin?
Well, right. I mean, our feeling is that that any war with Iraq is going to have huge significance for that entire part of the world, which is a part of the world that most Americans still don't know much about. So the emphasis of our coverage for the last 3 or 4 years has been going into as many of those countries as possible, doing series, thorough stories about the history, the culture, and politics. We were in Saudi Arabia last summer talking to military people there. We were in Qatar at the Al Udeid base when it first came out that, for example, that was going to be a big staging area. But trying to give our readers a feel for what the people in those areas are like, what they think about, how this war is going to impact that entire region, which is so important to us.
Bronwyn Latimer.
I'm a big believer in educating the photographers on the history and the politics and the culture of the countries that are involved. And so I spend a lot of time sending clips and recommending books, and half the time it turns out that people have already read them, which is great.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Sig Christensen.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're doing the same thing. We have a reporter on our staff, one of our most senior people, who is studying Arabic at the moment. I'm going to cover the war from the side of the military perspective from start to finish. And one thing I am doing is reading a book called the Saddam Hussein Reader, which is a fascinating compilation of stories that give you a pretty good insight in one book, I think, and of what has gone on in Iraq for the last 30 years or so. And I'm reading that in part because I'm anticipating that the peacekeeping and nation building part of this war that follows the war is probably going to be one of the most dynamic parts of the whole story. Rebuilding Iraq after we go in and break it is going to be an extraordinarily formidable task. You can wonder whether the Bush administration is really up to it, because they don't have much liking for peacekeeping. And, in fact, if you go on the Defense Department website, you won't find anything on it anymore. So, obviously, that's going to be a dynamic element of it. I'm trying to read up a little bit about it, and I think that The other thing you do is look at as many stories as you can, and of course, working in a newspaper every day, you have plenty of access to that.
Well, Sig, you're talking about preparing for coverage after the shooting war is over, or the main shooting war, I should say. Susan Taylor Martin, are you doing the same thing?
Yes, exactly. Yes, I mean we're making plans now for how we're going to cover the actual conflict, and then as Sig said, probably the most important part of the story will be the aftermath, trying to put together a democratic country from all these various factions that for years, decades have not gotten along, and it will have a huge effect on that region and potentially the world.
There are a lot of people who say that weapons of mass destruction are not the real issue here, that perhaps the real issue is oil. Jim Michaels, what do you think?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, I don't know if it could be answered a yes or no, but clearly there's a lot of strategic interest in that area, and always has been, and, you know, that's why there have been wars there over the ages. It's an area of extreme strategic importance for that reason. At the same time, though, clearly terrorism has become a central and key issue, and I think that's definitely a factor in the administration's decision making at this point. So I don't think it can be simplified to the extent that there's some cobble of oil interests that have gotten together and decided to carve up the region after a war.
Okay, we have just a few seconds left, and I want to ask Susan Taylor Martin the last question. You were talking about the military presence in San Antonio, but not you were implying that St. Petersburg did not have it. Actually, the Central Command is right around the corner from you.
Right, yeah. What I meant was that we do not have tens of thousands of soldiers based in this area the way you do in Fort Bragg or in Texas. Of course, we are the home of the U.S. Central Command, which we do cover. This is where Tommy Franks is based. Obviously, it's the key component of this war. But what I mean is, in terms of covering the military and their what they are going through, what the troops are going through, that is a less important story for us.
Okay, Susan, I'm sorry, we are out of time. Our guests today have been Vivian Walt in Baghdad, Sig Christensen in San Antonio, Texas, Susan Taylor Martin in St. Petersburg, Florida, and in Washington, Bronwyn Latimer and Jim Michaels. Our director is Pat Akers, and our producer, Sarah Andrea Fajardo. For all, I'm Stuart Lurie, global journalist. We'll be back next week.